We're brought to you today by Momentous. Over the last 16 years, I can safely say that I have tried almost every single plant-based protein out there. And I can tell you that most of them are highly processed with tons of additives, and or they taste terrible, they're not third-party tested, or simply just don't hit the nutritional bullseye with a legit science-supported formula with the appropriate amino acid profile that promotes optimal nutrient absorption, which is all just a long way of saying how enthusiastic I was to be introduced to Momentous's 100% plant-based protein, which solves for all of the above and then some with a precise blend of pea and rice proteins, which yields a complete amino acid profile, tastes great, and has become my go-to to ensure my body is supplied with energy for proper recovery and function. Momentous products are simply the best in the industry, which is why they're used by over 90% of NFL teams, by Olympians, Tour de France champs, and world-class athletes across every sport. With all the BS in the supplement world, I trust Momentous's industry-leading quality standards and quality. Try Momentous for yourself by going to livemomentous.com/richroll. For 20% off plant-based protein and all of their top-of-the-line products. That's livemomentous.com/richroll for 20% off. Traveling is one of my favorite things. I love it. I do a ton of it. But packing, well, not so much. But this is a dread that I have successfully cured thanks to Peak Design and their line of superb, totally dialed essentials that streamline and compartmentalize everything, making it all portable and easy to immediately access anything and everything I need without the hassle and inconvenience that has historically plagued me. First, they make these genius, super lightweight, compressible packing cubes, as well as shoe pouches and toiletry kits, so I can separate and organize everything in that very specific OCD way that I prefer. Separating the soiled from the fresh, the shirts from the pants, the workout gear from the workwear, with all my cords and my chargers and my batteries and card readers all neatly tucked in their design pouch, all of which fits perfectly along with easy accessibility in the expandable Peak Design 45L travel backpack. Here's the bottom line. Point blank, Peak Design just makes the best design stuff. Details matter, they get it, and all their stuff is a solid cut above everything else on the market, crafted to meet your needs. And right now, Peak Design is offering an exclusive 20% discount for all my listeners. And if you know these products, you know they pretty much never go on sale. To access the deal and check out some of my favorite Peak Design gear, go to peakdesign.com/richroll. That's P-E-A-K design.com/richroll.
The choices that you're making are really either supporting you or not.
Straight from the pages of Victoria's Secret, please welcome Gisele Bündchen.
Gisele Bündchen!
Gisele has walked in nearly 500 fashion shows and graced the covers of more than 1,200 different magazines.
On paper, like, you're perhaps highly unrelatable.
You know what it is? It's a character. That's a job I do to kind of make a living so I can, like, you know, put food on the table. Raising children is by far the most challenging thing I've ever done.
It's a different kind of modeling.
It's the type of modeling that I prefer.
Gisele Bündchen is one of the most recognized faces on the planet. A world-renowned supermodel and one of the top fashion icons of all time. But I want to ask you to set aside all of that. I want you to let go of any presuppositions you might have about her and her life. And I want you to meet her for who she really is, which I gotta say is surprisingly grounded as well as relatable. She's a mom, she's an environmentalist, and she's also someone who cares deeply about well-being. This passion that emerged from her very real and relatable struggles with anxiety, with panic attacks, which catalyzed this journey that she went on to overcome the unhealthy habits that drove her maladies, allowed her to rewrite her relationship with food, with her career and herself, and what matters most, all of which we explore today and further unfolds on the pages of her latest cookbook and lifestyle guide,
Nourish. Giselle is a delight. She's definitely a talker. And what else is there to say? This one is just good times all around. So here we go. This is me and Giselle Bundchen. So nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
So excited to have you here today.
Yes, me too.
When this opportunity presented itself, I was like, of course I want to talk to Giselle. And then I had my own, like, sort of mini panic attack. We're going to get into panic attacks. I'm like, what could I possibly talk to this person about? The all-time great supermodel of all time. Everybody knows this. On paper, like, you're perhaps highly unrelatable. But then the more you dig into your story and the more I kind of learned about your arc and your past and what brought you to this place, there's so much that's deeply relatable. And your kind of transformation story is remarkably similar to mine, although you did yours at like 23. I was 40. But there's so much in there. So I thought it would be cool to kind of talk a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and how you made these changes in your life. Because I think you're in this interesting new season right now where, despite the fact that you've been this wellness advocate and wellness warrior for a long time, my sense is that there's a more full embrace of that now with kind of how you see yourself and what's important to you.
Oh, well, thank you for the introduction.
Sure.
You know, yeah. The funny thing is people's, you know, what I did for a living is something that kind of just happened to me at 14 years old. You know, it was like, hey, do you want to be a model? And I thought, oh, I can help my family. You know, I can just make a living and help. You know, I have five sisters and all that. So modeling to me is something that is an opportunity that came along. Like, I think in life you have these opportunities that either you take that train and then see where it goes, you know, and I never even believed that this was going to take me and I was going to be doing this for almost 30 years. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things that I was like, oh, I'll start doing this job and, you know, send money home and help my sisters go through school and do all that. And maybe in 5 years, you know, I'll get a house because I didn't even go to school. You know, I was emancipated at 14. And
yeah, you were in Tokyo at 14.
I was living in Japan without speaking English or Japanese. And that's when I started learning the language of energy. You know what I mean? Because you don't have to understand the language. You just have to feel, you know, something. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more that is being said without words, you know?
Sure.
So I started learning about that. But I think that I went through this journey of modeling, which was something I thought was going to last 5 years, and I was just going to help my family out for a little bit. And it just kept going, you know, it just kept happening. You know, I didn't even think you can have longevity in this career because it's not what I saw really around me happening. But, you know, it kept working out, so I kept doing it. And it was kind of a mindless thing, you know, and you got in the hamster wheel. And I think we do that sometimes in life. And you're so young, you don't know, and you live the fast life and all of that. So in my early 20s, I developed, you know, anxiety and panic attacks and all that because, you know, when you drink a bottle of wine and that because you're like, I used to be a smoker. Mm-hmm. So I can't even imagine I used to smoke. It feels like a whole different life, you know. But it was the late 90s, and there was a lot of drugs in fashion and all
sure.
that. So I thought I was sane just because I was, like, having some wine and smoking cigarettes. Everybody was doing way worse things
yeah,
than me.
Yeah, I'm
so.
Sure you've seen a lot.
I've seen a lot. Yeah, that's a whole other show about that. That's a whole other story. But, yeah, so, you know, so that was the beginning for me to start reconnecting with myself because I think when I was 14 and I got that train, my only focus was like, how can I be the best that I can do on this? And that was my focus. And I didn't measure any sacrifice. It was like if I had to work 360 days a year and I felt like I couldn't say no because people were giving me a chance. And mm-hmm. then I was like in this really overdrive and burned out my adrenals. I found out later when I found this amazing natural doctor who told me like, listen, you don't have any more adrenals. They're shut down because you burned them basically.
Sure.
I'm like, but I'm only 22, you know? So basically, I had to change the habits that I, you know, smoking a pack of cigarettes, drinking alcohol every day to calm myself down, coffee all day to keep myself up, and also going from, you know, one time zone to the next. I was 3 days in Paris, 2 days in London, 1 day in New York, going back to, you know, my life was living in a suitcase. And of course, your nervous system is going to freak out, you know, and the way I was eating, it was very, you know, anything that was in front of me, I was just like not mindful about anything. You know, I was just kind of like a workhorse.
Right.
And when that happened to me is when I you know, I come from a family that is very, my grandmother had a tea for everything. So we never had, we were not the kind of, you know, you get sick, let me see this herbal remedy that we, you know, so.
Yeah, you grew up in kind of a small village, right, in Brazil. Yeah. Your grandmother was cultivating herbs and she was the person that everyone would go to for their remedies. So you have this sort of background and connection, you know, with the earth.
Exactly.
That, you know, is kind of lingering in the back of your mind when you're just, you know, hammering nails and you know, drinking wine and living that life. But you're young. It's like, that's kind of what your 20s are for.
Kind of.
And you're on this like jet plane. I mean, figuratively and literally, like your career's taking off. On top of that, a people-pleasing tendency where you feel like you have to say yes to everything and you're just go, 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 go.
Yeah, and I think, but that was a big wake-up call for me because I think sometimes, you know, you have to reach rock bottom. And when I had those anxiety and they start becoming like almost crippling because I couldn't get on planes. It was just, you know, I was going to all these doctors and they were like, you have to take this stuff. And I was just afraid of taking anything because I've never taken anything. You know, I was there was a tea for sale for this. Mm-hmm. There was, you know, my grandmother wasn't there. So finally, you know, I wasn't going to take a medication because just the idea of taking something, I was like, I was normal before. How can I go back being what I was? You know, like I didn't have these issues. So what's happening? Long story short, I found this doctor. I had to replace my habits. It was that simple. I had to replace these habits that had created the reality I was living at that moment, which was, you know, really killing me in so many ways, you know, killing my spirit, killing my, and I replace it with good habits. So now instead of smoking cigarettes and having a mocha frappuccino in the morning, I'll go out and do breath work and go out for a run. And, you know, I replace, in one day, I gave up everything. Mm. Because he looked at me, he says, Giselle, he called me Adrenalina. He says, do you want to live? And I said, I do. Mm-hmm. He's like, so we're going to change my diet. And that's for the first time in my life that I realized that I was really like the one who got myself there, and I was the only person who could get myself out by the choices that I was making. So I had to take full responsibility for what I had created, but it was in my power, only in my power to change that. There were no doctors, nobody who was going to save me. I had to change, you know, the choices I was making, and I did that, and it was incredible because after over a year and a half, like really struggling with anxiety and panic attacks and all that, within 3 months, I was like, I never had another incident. Mm. And it was, you know, and once you start meditating, I mean, at that point, this was 20 years ago, right? It wasn't like people were talking about meditation and yoga and any of that. It was just, you know, when you sit in silence and you reflect, which is what we don't really give ourselves time to do because the world is so fast-paced and everything is catching your attention, is trying to throw you off your center. You know, everything is so busy. It's like an overload of information. To have that space to go inside and reflect and look and really take a step back, I think that was the biggest blessing of my life. So really, I think what could have killed me is what gave me a whole new life. And it was amazing because since then, like everything changed. Like I realized that food is my medicine. I realized that I am the director of my own movie, that I'm creating my reality based on the choices that I'm making, but what I'm choosing to, not only the people I'm choosing to have around in my life, but what type of energy, what kind of thoughts I allow to, what am I feeding, you know? Mm-hmm. What kind of thoughts am I? So all of that. So that became like a big changing of seasons for me in my early 20s.
What were those first couple weeks like if you went completely cold turkey all of these bad habits
I think
once?
It was like a drug addict. I never was I guess I was a drug addict on illegal drugs because I guess alcohol is a drug and so is cigarettes, nicotine and all that, and caffeine and all that, but they're like socially accepted. But I tell you that I had the worst migraine. I mean, I felt like maybe that's what a person who's going, like you have gone to rehab, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know what you felt. I would love to hear, but for me, it was
fun.
Right? I mean, I don't know about that.
Only way I know how to do it though. I don't understand how people kind of phase out of stuff. Like you have
it's
to,
hardcore.
For me, you have to
it,
draw the line and step over it and it's going to suck and you're going to be uncomfortable for a while. But you know that on the other side of that lies all of this opportunity and possibility.
And that's what happened to me. I think there was that Because what I knew that where I was and where, if you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always gotten. It's that simple. And what I realized at that moment, that what I created for myself was not what I wanted. I needed a drastic change. And then it was like, draw the line, stopped everything in one day. And the migraines and all of that, like the consequences of what I had done, I had to deal with them. You know, it took me like 2 weeks, I think. I was like having the worst migraines just because I didn't know if it was the nicotine, the caffeine, the alcohol. I don't know what it was, but it was all of it together. And, but then it was amazing because from that experience, I became so much stronger. And there are lots of different things that happened in my life after that. I feel like every time we get tested, it's like the Super Mario, you know, like the little video game when you go to do the big boss, like you go through all the phases and you go to level one, the big boss is like one, it's okay to defeat that one. But then the second one is like a tougher big boss. And then the third one is, you know, it's life.
Yeah,
feel like that's what life is. You get like the new tools, so you get equipped, and then you go to the next challenge that is a bigger one. And then it's a bigger one. I feel like that's why we're here, you know, to keep seeing how we can expand, how much
to
more
grow,
we can
to evolve,
to expand, to see how strong and how creative and how, you know, how much we can experience of all this.
How did you plug life. That into the fast paced life of your modeling career? Because it's one thing if you're living a more kind of grounded at home lifestyle where you can control your food and your environment a little bit better. But when you're flying all over the world and you're on these sets and there's craft service and it's junk food, like you have to be way ahead of the curve to prepare everything, to have everything kind of organized for yourself. Because how do you, you know, if you're in just hotels all over the place and you arrive at midnight, like how are you getting your, you know, like how did you manage all of that?
You have to be very disciplined. I think, you know, when I did this book called Lessons and it was like everything starts with discipline. That was like my first chapter. And that's what I believe. You have to decide. And then you have to have the discipline to follow through. So once you realize that these choices that you're making are having a positive impact in your life, you want to continue doing them. You know what I mean? You don't want to fall back into something that you didn't feel good. That's your past. Like, you don't want to go back there again. So you're going to stick to the plan. Like, this is what's working and this is what made me feel good again. So I'm going to stick to this. And of course, it's not 100%. You have to be compassionate with yourself too and say, you know, I'll be like, you know, life is hard as it is. You don't need to beat yourself in the head sometimes if you go and you, oh, you know, I had like, I was exhausted. I had like a banana bread or something, or I had, you know. But I think you realize that the choices that you're making are really either supporting you or not. Mm-hmm. You know, supporting you, living the life that making you feel good and living the life that you want and is taking to the direction where you want to go or not. And then it's just kind of an easier choice to make, right? And then I feel like when I go to the jobs, you know, I've got to the point in my life where people know how I eat and, you know, I can tell people like, listen, this is what I want.
It's
I want
on
salads.
The rider. You exactly. got an extensive rider.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, because I was already working for so long. So I have, you know, I got to the, I guess, really the privilege to be able to kind of say like, this is the kind of things that I would like to eat. So if please at the job, you know, if you're working 10, 12 hours in a studio, can we have these things available? You know what I mean? So then it was easier to keep the food healthy, you know, because I think that's so important. And then just to say, I feel like, and then saying no to those things, you know, like coffee or alcohol, or things that I was just so used to because I was still in that same environment. The environment hadn't changed. I had changed, but all of that was around me still. But then it was just a choice of saying, you know, I feel great. And I haven't drank alcohol in over 2 years now, too. This is something, you know, even when I went back drinking after, it was very moderate. You know, I was still like I would drink socially sometimes, you know, peer pressure. Sometimes like, oh, come on, have a drink, you know. And then you like feel like, especially in my world, I mean, everyone pretty much is like socially having a drink. So I would be like, okay, I'll have a drink. But then it got to a point that I was like, and that was like 20 years later because it just happened over 2 years ago. I was like, I don't want to drink. Like, I don't care what anyone thinks. And I don't care if they have peer pressure. I'm going to have my mint tea, my chamomile tea. And if they want to drink, I'm not making anyone feel bad about drinking. They can do whatever they want. This is their temple, you know?
Yeah.
This is my temple. I get to choose. And they shouldn't make me feel bad that I don't want to, you know? So then I kind of stood up for myself. I think that happens after your 40s. Like, you care less about what other people think. And
wait till you're 50.
Oh my God, I can't wait for that. I'm going to be like,
sure
he's going to be
like,
He's going to be amazing.
But I think the thing you mentioned like being directed and being kind of dedicated to your path. And I feel like that's the underappreciated aspect of understanding you and your career. A lot of people arrive in New York City every single day with a similar dream or ambition that you had when you were a young person and you arrived there. And a lot of those people are very beautiful. You're very beautiful, but that doesn't tell the story of how you translated like an opportunity into the career that you had. And I think between the lines, there is an intense work ethic and a very intentional approach to what you were doing. Like, how did you apply those skills? Like, what is the differentiator between you and the career that you've enjoyed versus, you know, the other beautiful people who aren't enjoying the same kind of career? You can't, and you're not allowed to say luck or you're, you know.
No, I don't believe in luck. I don't believe in luck. I believe in hard work. But I believe in, I think discipline, but I also believe that I always treated everyone the way I like to be treated. And I've always was appreciative. I have this immense sense of gratitude for just being there. So even though, you know, people were like, oh, you know, you know, when I was 19, I was like, I won the model of, the model of the year. And everybody's like, how does it feel to be? It didn't matter to me because quite frankly, I never saw myself as a model. It's just not something, I didn't drink the Kool-Aid. I didn't believe because I was a model or because I became successful in this job, like I was better than anybody. I believe that I just got to learn that craft really well. And I understood what the job entailed. And like, I learned how to do the job really well, but it by no means is what defined me. It's just something I did. It's not who I am. I don't know if, you know, mm-hmm. It's like, I go there, I had this opportunity at, you know, 13, 14 years old when I finally left home and start pursue this career. That really, I thought it was just really, I did it for the money. I did it because I was like, what else am I going to do at 14 years old that I can help my family? You know, I don't have any other jobs that are offering me an opportunity. So I'll take this one. So for me, it was really like a job. So I never like, it didn't kind of define me. I kind of did it my way. Like I never became like, you know, it was like, oh, it needs to be glamorous. I was never glamorous. I'm a jeans and t-shirt type of girl. Like, and if I needed to go to parties or hang out with this type of people, I never did any of that. Like I went there, I did my job. I did the best that I could. I never was late in my life for my jobs. Like never showed up like late. I was there before everyone. I was there 100%. You know, I just wanted to make sure that if people were booking me and they were trusting in me, that I was going to show up and deliver, you know? And I think that's kind of what it was. I did it my way, you know, and it didn't broke me kind of. Because I saw, you know, people in this business, you know, you can lose yourself. Because if you drink the Kool-Aid, if you start thinking, you know, like you lose yourself in it. I never lost myself. It was just a job. And it's still just a job. I can't even believe I'm still doing it. Sometimes yeah. I go in and I do it. You know, it's not what I do full time anymore. But it's just one of those things that, you know, I got to do this. I got to make a career out of it. And I got to make a great living and help my family. And I have wonderful, you know, I got to travel the world and learn different languages and all of that. And that's how I see it. I don't see it as a, you know, I don't see myself
as like—
You're
not defined by it.
Not at all.
You're not caught up in the kind of dark underbelly of that very strange world.
None of that. This whole world is like almost like a parallel reality for me. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like a switch on button. I go there, I do my job, I take my picture, I turn it off, I go home and I have the same friends, I have my family. I'm very close with my family.
But I think you're very good at seeing opportunities when they arise. And you tell a little story in the new book about being 14 and en route to Tokyo, and your dad gave you a little bit of money that was intended for getting a cab from
That's the first
the
day
airport.
I arrived in Sao Paulo.
And instead of using that money, oh, it was Sao Paulo.
That's
okay,
when I
right.
first
like
moved to
you were super young,
yes,
right?
So I was like,
you had a little bit of money
I took the
to
bus.
Take a cab, and you had yeah. the presence of mind to say, this money would be better spent buying some clothes so I can do better in my auditions or whatnot, yeah. Which isn't, like, that's not normal. Like, that's somebody who's thinking ahead, who's planning long term, who's understanding that they have an opportunity in front of them and trying to figure out how to make the most out of it with limited resources. And I think that speaks to or says a lot about your sensibility or your perspective as a business person.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting to see it that way. I mean, for me, at that moment in time, you know, I just felt like I did something else than that. You know, that was one of the things. And now that you're saying that, I actually did that throughout, because I bought my first apartment when I was 19 years old. And when everybody was buying, you know, designer bags, all the models, and, you know, like, remember, I didn't know I was going to last in this business. Uh-huh. I thought, like, I didn't go to school. I didn't go to high school. I didn't, you know, I left. I went to work. And whenever I go back, I thought I was going to be a farmer or something, because I just always loved the land. But I didn't think, like, you know, like, where am I going to go from here? So I have to make sure that I have at least a place to live. I'm a Cancer, so I want to have, like, a stable home. And when I was 19, you know, people start flying me first class because I was, like, the model of the year. I saw all the clients now are paying me first class. I was exchanging those tickets for coach classes because I was every 2-3 days in a different country. And instead of paying my, you know, a rent in an apartment, I put down a down payment for an apartment, and then I was paying my mortgage instead of paying rent.
Yeah, and you're 19.
And I was 19, so I owned my first apartment at 19 years old. It was like a in New York City. It was like facing a wall of another building, mind you. It was like a very small apartment.
That's smart. You know, that does require some maturity and some long-term thinking.
Well, because I just thought to myself, like, you know, I don't know how long I'm going to stay here. You know, I have to have a place to live if I, like, I'm not going to live empty-handed. You know what I mean? Like, what do I care about a bag, or like, what is that going to give me? It's not going to be a roof over my head. I need to make sure that I have, that I can spend in the right places. But I think that sense came from my mother, because we grew up, you know, my mother was a cashier in the bank. My father had, like, lots of different jobs. Like, he had a real estate job, but he was, you know, my mom, like, literally, we were, like, really simple people and grew up in 2 bedrooms with 6 girls, and money was always tight. So I learned how to, it's the same thing in the book, is like, how do you prepare? How do you not waste food? I mean, everything is like, I think in my life, I was kind of like raised that way. You know what I mean? Kind of plan ahead, like, for tomorrow, so you make sure that you have, like, food for everyone. Like we're going to reuse the meat we cook on the barbecue, and we're going to put it in the rice. We're going to have carreteras, so you're going to have an abundant meal because we have the rest of the food. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. It's like you put money in the bank, so when you retire, you have something to live off when you can no longer work. The same thing I feel about food. Like, you eat the right food, so when you're older, you're able to have the energy and your body's functioning because you made the right choices. So for me, it's the same thing. You know, it's kind of making, like, just being kind of, what is necessary here? Like, do I really need this? What do I need more? Do I need a roof over my head, or do I need this bags and this stuff? Do I need to take a taxi when I arrive to the model's apartment when I'm 14, even though I've never been to the city? Or can I take the subway and save the money so I can get the clothes for the casting and maybe I can get a job? It's like, it's kind of thinking, like, with the resources that I have right now, what is the smartest?
Sure.
How is the smartest way to use them, I guess?
I get a ton of DMs asking about my shades, my spectacles, and the answer is always the same, and it boils down to 4 letters, R-O-K-A, Roka. Founded by 2 of my Stanford swimming compadres from back in the day, Rokas are designed by athletes for athletes with groovy styles for everything from the bike to the boardroom. It's basically every kind of eyewear for any and all conditions without the dork factor. All their optics are top tier. All their frames are flyweight light. None of them will ever slip down your nose, no matter how much you drip. And they've got style options for miles. Sunnies, formal eyeglasses, prescriptions, progressives. It's all in there. I rock the Hamiltons during the day. I've got them in tortoise. I've got them in matte black. I've got them in clear. On the bike and on the trail, it's the Torinos for me. And aviators when I'm on the go, traveling, or behind the wheel. Roka rules. And right now, you can check out Roka's eyewear lineup and feel the difference for yourself. Unlock 20% off your order with the code RICHROLL at roka.com. That's roka.com. At our core, we all long for peace. We all yearn for contentment. And above all, we all desire happiness. But underappreciated is the efficacy of meditation and our ability, our innate ability to train the mind to to achieve more joy, more well-being, and equanimity. Waking Up's guided meditations, founded by neuroscientist, philosopher, and best-selling author Sam Harris, provide just that, plus this extraordinary library of additional resources, courses on stoicism, courses on cognitive behavioral therapy, time management, procrastination, and so much more. Sam also has dozens of thoughtful conversations with leading scholars on everything from psychedelics to happiness. But my absolute favorite is the complete organized collection of talks by Alan Watts, which is just a stunning treasure of wisdom I find myself revisiting time and time again. Listeners of the show can get 30 days to try Waking Up for free, plus you'll save $30 on the in-app price. If price is a concern, Waking Up offers the app for free for anyone who can't afford it. You can find the links on their website to get a full scholarship. Right now, just go to wakingup.com/richroll to start your free month today. It's a most worthy investment in yourself. That's wakingup.com/richroll. I'm super proud to announce my next venture, Voicing Change Media. This beautiful consortium of thinkers, storytellers, artists, and visionaries all committed to fostering meaningful exchanges and sharing thought-provoking content. Voicing Change Media will feature shows like The Proof with Simon Hill, Soul Boom with Rainn Wilson, Mentor Buffet with Alexi Pappas, Feel Better, Live More with Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, and The Conversation with Amanda Decadene. You can explore this network and all its offerings at voicingchange.media. There feels like a distinction, a difference between Gisele Bündchen and the things that you care about, being this sort of homebody, family person, holistic lifestyle, like all of this stuff. And then, you know, Gisele, the runway, you know, on the runway, like it's almost an alter ego.
It might be an alter ego, but it's, you know what it is? It's a character. I always call it her. Because I think being a model, what I understood as being a model is to play a character in a silent movie. You know, you get to experience all these different character, all these different aspects of being a woman, let's say, because one designer wants you to be more androgynous, you know. One designer wants, you know, I remember doing a Balenciaga campaign. I was like, they made me a boy. I was like, literally, like a week, I was like a man, a boy. And in one, I was like the sexy Versace campaign, like, you know, like with big hair and like, you know, push-up bra, you know? So it was kind of like I got to play from the androgynous girl to the very sexy to the tomboy. Like I got to, you know, I mean, you should see, I don't know if you ever saw my book, the other one that was like the 20 years, I did a 20 year anniversary book.
I watched the video that you did where you kind of went through it and you were talking about what was going on with you with each of those photographs.
Yeah, so it's really about kind of playing these different roles, but it's just instead of you talking like you would be in a movie, you gotta make the image, that picture, that one capture image to...
It's a performance art.
It's a performance
art.
Yeah,
but
and
it's such a weird world,
a job.
Though. I know that, like, Alexander McQueen, he was really the catalyst, right?
Yeah.
He was the guy who kind
he gave
of
me
made
the
it
chance,
happen for you.
You know, he gave me the chance.
But when you watch his shows or some of these other shows, like, the designs are stunning and gorgeous, but they're also totally inaccessible. It's like,
you can't
who wears
wear
this?
That
Does anybody, is there anybody in the world that even wear? I mean, if you're Lady Gaga, I guess, or
it's
somebody like that, but like, yeah, it's a fantasy. Yeah. And so it's curious, like, how does that translate into, I guess it's just how you feel and how you think about a particular designer or a brand, and not so much about directly selling those designs to the person who's going to the department store or the boutique, right?
Yeah, they're not thinking
I don't
that.
Even understand the business model of the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, neither, to be honest with you, but I think it's a really, I mean, I think it has changed a lot since I started. Like, I see a big shift because I think before there was a lot more creativity. There was allowed a lot more creativity. I think, you know, McQueen or John Galliano, you know, the shows and stuff, like, you were like in a fantasy world. Like,
sure, and the photographers being rock stars themselves.
Oh, yeah. And it was I think it was a moment in time where there was so much less about selling, but it was much more about the inspiration and the aspiring, you know, the aspiration of creating like a fantasy and like a, And it was a lot of fun then, I have to say, at that time, because I mean, it was
I would have been dead. I wouldn't have survived it. I would have gone all in. I would have been at every after hours party. No, it would have been a disaster.
You see, I was in bed, like studying my astrology books, like by 10, you know, that was me. I was like, by 10, I was like, oh no, I have to go. I was like, I have to start early so I can go to bed early. So for me, it was a different thing, but you know, but I guess for me, I also felt very responsible because I didn't want to, one of the guiding lights for me, I really believe was my parents, because I saw how hard they work and I didn't want to disappoint them. So I think part of like me being so stay on the line was like, I'm not disappointing my parents. I don't care if they're not here. They are going to know what I'm doing. Like, I remember part of the reason why I got so freaked out about the McQueen show when they sent me out like without a top, because I couldn't speak English and they didn't even do a fitting anyway. So then I was like, oh my God, if my parents see this, they're going to make me go back home. And then I, you know.
What is it like when you go back home?
But it wasn't an internet. But there was no internet in 1997. It wasn't. So thank God, because they didn't even saw that. Otherwise, they would have been like, what are you doing? I'd be like, I don't know.
And you have five siblings, right?
I have five sisters. Yeah. I'm a middle child. I have two older sisters and two younger sisters. Mm-hmm. And I'm a twin. Mm-hmm. And the middle. So we are like the sandwich, like the cheese in the sandwich.
Being Brazilian, you're connected to the Amazon and to climate change issues. And you've done a lot in terms of your environmental advocacy and clean water initiatives. Talk a little bit about how that began and what that looks like now.
You know, I've always been a big, basically, like a child of nature. I always tell my children when they ask, you know, what's your religion? They say, Mom, we don't go to church. I say, you know what? You're in church every day. I say, what do I say when people ask what my religion is? I say, love is your religion and nature is your church. That's your cathedral. That's the big church. That's our temple, you know? So you honor your temple. You love your temple. Because that's the only reason why we are all alive, because this whole ecosystem is making it possible, you know, to grow our food, to provide us with all the things we need to survive. So, and that's how I grew up. I felt that way. And especially having a grandmother that everything was from the earth, you know, she grew everything she ate and the earth was giving us the herbs that we needed to, like when we fell ill. And I grew up in that way. So when you grew up in that way and you grew up running around bare feet, you know, I come from a small village and anytime you want to eat something, you grab, there was like a tangerine tree or like an orange tree or a plum tree, and you just go and pick up the fruit from the tree. We never bought fruits from the supermarket. You know, you go, either you had it in your backyard or your neighbor had it or the other neighbor, you know, somebody had the fruit you wanted to eat, you just go grab it. So I think when you live with that connection to nature, you have a different appreciation. It's like, so I feel like nature is just like, it's me. Like, I think we are nature, you know, we are that. And I think this connection from nature for me is just something I've always known, you know, is how I grew up. And so for me, taking care of which I love, which is nature, is natural. But the first time I realized there was really problems happening is when I went to actually spend some time with the indigenous people in the Xingu area of the Amazon in the 2004. And that's when the first time I realized, you know, what pesticides were doing, what mining was doing, how they were contaminating the rivers. And basically all the indigenous tribes, they were living and depending on that water, they were like getting sick. And even though they were living very wholesomely, you know, with nature and, you know, by the impact that the big farms and different mining and all that stuff was having, was really having a really terrible impact in their livelihoods. And that's when the first time I was like, I need to do something about it. And that's when I started, like, I had a flip-flop line at the time in Brazil. And we gave a percentage, you know, to... That's actually a funny story. The indigenous people, and I was like, I wonder what they would do with this funds. But it was like a group that helped the indigenous in Brazil. And the funny enough, when I turned 40, this was in 2004, so I was like 24. Cut to when I'm 40, 2020, I was 40. I wanted to do something for my 40th birthday, and I was like, oh, I want to plant some trees in the Amazon, and how are we going to do it? So we looked around for who can help us do that, and we contacted the people that are working with the indigenous people that we knew in Brazil. And they're like, we have the largest seed bank in the Amazon. Mm. And we started with the money, with the whole program that you gave in 2004, that money that was for the sale of the flip-flops. Now, years later, they had the largest seed bank of, you know, the indigenous, they collected the largest seed bank. And this is how with that whole group of people, we basically planted over 300,000 trees in that area of the Amazon. So that was like years later. So that's just how funny how life goes. But for me, because I was so connected to nature and I always wanted to help, and my dad always said, you know, water is the most important thing. And of course, I saw that with the indigenous people, because that's how they were all getting sick, because all the you know, residue of mining and pesticides were going into their water. In my little village, we were having a lot of problems with agriculture as well, where there was a lot of runoffs from Roundup and all the stuff that they use in agriculture, all the pesticides and stuff. And it was getting a lot of people sick. So we actually did the Agua Limpa program in 2000, and I think it was 2009 or so. I don't remember when we started, but it was like a long time ago. And I funded it. And my dad, who's also a sociologist, worked with the university, and we basically regenerated the whole area of the river that was kind of, you know, getting the water to the city, and we were able to clean it. It took us like a few years to do it, you know. Wow. It was pretty simple because all we had to do, I mean, it was not simple. My dad is the one who did the work. It was simpler for me. I just kind of funded it. But he was there every day. He had to work with, I don't know how many farmers. You had to take their piece of land and kind of grow the native species forest, you know, the native forest back. So then
there's a buffer.
There was a buffer. Yeah, yeah. And then the root systems could filtrate it before all that stuff would go into the river. And then that was the Agua Limpa project. And that was one of the projects we did to clean the water. And anyway, so there's lots of different things. But in the overall thing, my thing is, you know, we got to take care of Mother Earth. She takes care of us. You know, when people say to me, oh, we're going to save the planet, I say, that's such an ego thing. You know, as humans, we think we're going to save anything. The planet is in her own process of evolution. This is dinosaurs were here before us, and, you know, Lemuria, I mean, so many different civilizations.
The planet will be fine.
That's what I always say. I say, please don't fool yourself. But I think we are really, you know, saving ourselves.
We need to,
I say, there's no
saving
the planet.
We need to reel ourselves back.
Yeah, this is really about us protecting the resources and taking care of what we really need for our survival. Because once we are gone, the planet is going to regenerate. I mean, I've seen this over and over again. The planet regenerates itself so quickly, you know, because it's just a very intelligent. We need to learn from nature. Instead of like trying to control nature, we need to just like take a humble pill and learn from the big mama.
We've moved so far away from that. And we do live in this dualistic mindset where we think there's, you know, our environments and then there's nature, or there's us and that's outside. But really understanding that you're never out of nature, as you said, I think is the first point of trying to really deepen your relationship with the world in which you live.
And
we
I
all
think,
live and share. Yeah. And I think when it comes to the Amazon, like, we all hear about deforestation and all the, you know, clearing that's going on for cattle grazing and the strip mining and all the stuff that you mentioned, but it's an abstraction, especially for, you know, people in North America. Like, we know it's going on, we know it's bad, but I've never visited there. Like, I've never seen it myself. And you being Brazilian gives you kind of a deeper appreciation and understanding of the extent of it.
You know, I think it's how people tell the story, because I think it's a lot deeper than, you know, I think people, like, depending on the industry that wants to benefit from something, they tell the story and they say, okay, this is what we're going to do is about the cattle.
Oh, yeah.
It's so crazy. A lot of NGOs go in there and they say, we're going to have an NGO because we're going to, like, protect the Amazon. But they're, meantime, they're the owners of the bigger paper company that comes from the Amazon. Mm-hmm. They are just not, you know what I mean?
So it's not all as it seems.
You know, it's a wild, wild west there. And one of the biggest, you know, I've been there a few times and also done a lot of just kind of like talking to people and understanding what happens there. And a lot of the, you know, there's ancient woods there and a lot of that goes to Europe. So like what a lot of the cattle, for example, is what they use to kind of occupy the land. But what they're really after, which is really valuable there, is like gold and mine, you know,
the rare metals.
The rare metals. Yeah, the rare metals and the gold and all that stuff that's in there. That's what interests this, like, you know, the different countries, let's say, that are not Brazil. And because it's so corrupt, unfortunately, you know, Brazil is very corrupt. The politicians are very corrupt. What happens is they sell those rights to those countries, and then we have what we have. And then the cattle, like, in the end, they just kind of put them there because they have to occupy the land after they, because they have to enter. If you go there.
After they've removed everything.
Because they have to remove
the value.
The value.
Then they put all the cows there.
That's what they do. So they remove the ancient wood. They remove the precious metals. But they have to get there because if you fly over it, it means you're flying for hours over just a green carpet. So for you to have access to that, you can't just like clear cut because it grows. So what they do to keep the forest from growing, they just throw, because it's very fertile, the soil, as soon as you cut, because imagine that soil has been there, like receiving all those healthy bacteria from the leaves falling, super fertile. So within like 3 days, grass grows.
Right.
And then in order for the trees not to keep growing, because if you just leave abandoned, that's what's going to happen. The birds are going to carry the seeds. They're going to drop the seeds. Things are going to start growing again. And then they won't have access, you know? So they kind of, it's just like a cycle. Like, but what it is really after, what they're really after it is the big stuff. And it's not, unfortunately, you know, it's so sad, you know, it's greed.
Mm-hmm.
In the end of the day, it's greed. And it's greed by people that, you know, they don't have those natural resources where they are, and they understand the situation in Brazil and how corrupt the system is, you know, with the politicians. And they come and they just buy those, right? They exploit it. They exploit it in every way. But and in the end of the day, it's I think greed is the biggest disease of our time.
You're not going to get an argument from me on that. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you had an extra hour, what would you do with it? Would you run? Would you read? Would you be there for a friend? Time is our most precious asset. But its value depends on how you spend it. Therapy clarifies your values, making prioritizing what truly matters easier. For about 27 years at this point, therapy has just been a crucial life non-negotiable for me. It preceded my sobriety journey. It continues to remain consistent because if there's one thing that I've learned, we all have blind spots. There is always more growth to be had, and getting better is a team sport. I just can't solve my problems with the same brain that created those problems. So bringing all that stuff into the light by talking it out with a pro is just key. Consider therapy with BetterHelp, an online platform for convenience, flexibility, and alignment with your schedule. A quick questionnaire connects you with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime at no extra cost. Your mental well-being is worth it. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/richroll today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/richroll. We're brought to you today by a very exciting brand new sponsor, Go Brewing. I am sober. I don't drink. And I devoted so many episodes of this podcast to the unreal benefits of an alcohol-free lifestyle. Why? Because even if you don't have issues with booze and suds, no amount of alcohol is good for you. At a minimum, it wreaks havoc on your sleep and produces a hangover that destroys your energy, your mood, and your focus. At worst, it turns your whole life upside down. But no longer does that mean you have to break up with your favorite brew, because my pals at Go Brewing are making all your favorite brews, minus the alcohol, fewer calories, and more productive tomorrows. It's not every day that I get the privilege to witness the inception of a company collaborating with our podcast, but that's exactly what happened with Go Brewing. I'm going to tell you this story. A few years back, I spoke at this event in Illinois, fittingly named Go. And it turns out that very day catalyzed Joe, the founder, to start his own NA beer company, Go Brewing. I had no idea about any of this until I bumped into Joe at Jesse Itzler's Running Man event the other month in Georgia. And he shared this story with me. I savored his fare in all its varieties and deeply moved by the mission and what he shared with me, and just impressed with the insane taste and quality of his alcohol-free concoctions, I wanted to help share the discovery. Made with natural ingredients faithful to traditional beer styles, Go Brewing has an impressive lineup of delicious, small-batch, craft, alcohol-free brews,
all without added sugar or artificial processing. My favorite is their double IPA, not just another story. But basically, you just really can't go wrong because everything they make is brewed to perfection, worthy of trying yourself, which you can now do at gobrewing.com. That's gobrewing.com and use the code RICHROLL for 15% off your first purchase. Back to the wellness stuff. Mm-hmm. You're so intentional with food and lifestyle practices, breath work, like all of these kind of protocols and the ways in which you live that you express and explain in this book. It's a lot, and you have two kids. They're, how old are they now? Like 15?
14 and 11.
11.
And I have a bonus child that is like going to be 17, so.
Oh, okay. Right. How do you instill these choices in your parenting? How do you get your kids excited about the things that are in their best interest from a wellness perspective?
I think the number one thing I feel is like monkey see, monkey does, right? I think you have to be the example. You have to live it. Because I think whatever you say is one thing, and whatever you do, you know, whatever you say, whatever you do, they have to be the same thing, right?
Simpatico.
Yeah, they have to be simpatico. And that's what it is. And I think for the kids, for my kids were a lot easier because I was home a lot with them. So I was, you know, taking them to school every day, making their breakfast, you know, just having my gardens at home, growing the food. So when the kids would come for play dates at the house, you know, my kids were grabbing like everything raw, cucumbers, carrots, like green beans. They were just grabbing it from the garden and like collecting things and putting in the basket. It was like a game for them. And it was like, oh, friends are coming over. What are we going to grab for us to do our picnic outside? And then, so they grew up in that way, you know, so it was easier for me to feed them healthier food and explain to them, you know, we always composted, we had bees at our house. So, you know, they were learning about, you know, when the beekeeper would come and they explain, you know, how much honey can you take and how much honey do you leave for the bees and how does a queen bee work and all the, so
they're emotionally connected.
They were emotionally connected. Yeah. They were part of that. Like I was as a kid. So for them it's really natural. And they were also homeschooled for the last 3 years. During the, you know, the whole pandemic thing, and we moved from Boston to Tampa. So, it was a whole new world for them. So I homeschooled them and now they just went back to school. But I have to tell you, I see a huge difference, especially because my son is 14 now. So he wants to kind of push back.
This is what I'm getting at.
How old are your kids?
Well, they range from 28 to 16 and each one of, there's four and each of them is different. But it's a delicate dance because, you know, we raised our kids similarly, but they reach a certain age and part of individuation and maturing is taking ownership for your own choices and understanding what you stand for and what you don't. And in order to really define that and hone that, you have to go out and kind of push the envelope and try new things. Otherwise, it's just something you're doing because that's the way you were raised and that's what your parents told you, as opposed to really owning it for yourself. And so we have learned that you have to have the reins very loose and let them go out and do what they want to do and control the environment at home, but be, you know, very kind of nonplussed if they go and make a choice that you wouldn't make or whatever, and just be curious about it and allow them the space to do that. And, you know, you hope they come back and, you know, do it the way you taught them to. And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And again, every one of them is different in our case. But
I think
as they get to a certain point, and especially, you know, when they're with peers and friends and they're in social situations, those things they have to learn for themselves. And you have to allow them to, I think.
It's so interesting.
So you have to let
that.
Go a little bit.
Oh, let go and let God.
Yeah.
I tell myself that is like a mantra. You know, and I remind myself of, like, my mom let me leave home. She emancipated me, and I was living in Japan at 14, and there was no cell phones. Like, I call, you know.
Can you imagine doing that for one of your children right now?
No, and actually, you know what is so funny? Because I was having a conversation with my son about that. He was complaining, you know, I have chores in my house. you know, kids have to do their chores. So set the table, wash the dishes, you know, now I make a point, you know, I cook at, you know, they come from school, I'm cooking, you know, so one has to set the table, whoever sets the table, the other has to wash the dishes. And there is like, you have to clean your room, you have to do the basic stuff, you know. My daughter is doing amazingly. She loves it. And she's like really good and very proud of herself. Mom, look how good I clean the dishes. Like, she's really good. And she's washing herself. She's not putting it in the machine. She wants to learn how to really wash it and do it right. And she's very focused on it. My son is like, always like, why do I have to do this? You know? So actually, we had like a breakthrough this Christmas, this whole holiday season. Because I said, he says to me, I'm going to leave home when I'm 18, Mom. And I don't know if I'm going to go to college. You didn't go to college. You didn't go to school. I'm going to just leave home when I'm 18. And I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. I'm like, okay, that's great. So you're going to live in your own apartment. And who's going to cook for you? And who's going to wash your dishes? And who's going to clean your clothes? Who's going to do that? And he's like, for a second, he's like, because you're not going to have a chef and like a, you know, like, and he was thinking for a second, and I say, well, this is why when mommy tells you to do those things at home, you know, is because I want to give you more tools for your toolbox. Because when you learn how to do those things and they become second nature to you, then you don't even have to think about it. You become empowered to do it for yourself. You don't depend on anybody. And that's nothing. It's amazing to be able to do that. I said, you know what made me feel so like strong and capable when I left my home? Because my mom taught me how to do those things. So when I left home and I was living by myself at 14 years old, I was at first at 13, at 14 I moved to Japan. But because I was living in a mother's apartment, I was the only person there who knew how to clean, cook, iron, do absolutely everything in the house because my mom taught me. And it was easy for me. I didn't think it was a struggle. I was happy to do it. And I was happy to do it for the other girls that didn't know how to do it. But if you're going to be planning on living on your own at 18, who do you think is going to do all those things for you? So all I'm telling you is like, take advantage that mommy's here for you right now, and I'm able to teach you all those things. And you can do it at your time. I'm not telling you like, at this time you have to wash the dishes. So let me just help you. I'm going to create a list for you, and you just have to do them. And you can decide if you want to wash clothes once or twice a week. You can decide if you want to wash the dishes right after dinner or before you go to bed, whatever you want. But if you learn how to do those things, you're going to see how empowered you're going to feel. And the more tools we can put, like the more things, like the simple things like that you can learn and that you can equip your toolbox to do, you're just going to be just that much like capable. And there's nothing more fulfilling than feeling like you're able to do stuff, that you're capable. And then he looked at me and he's like, okay, Mom, so when we get back home, you give me that list and I'm going to do it. I'm like,
oh, wow. I was going to say, like, he actually received that. Like,
I think I got a victory.
The hormones are raging, like whatever, Mom, you know, storming off. Like you can get that reaction too. That was good. Good job.
Don't you think that was a good thing? But you see, it was a moment that I used what he said, because when he thought to himself, that's true, how am I gonna do all that stuff? I say, you don't wanna live in like a, you know, a messy, stinky place that is not clean. Like, you know, you want to like have, you know, so you need to know how to do this stuff. And I think I see like all the things that happen in life like that, like different tools we acquire, you know, even the job that I, you know, my job, like all the tools that I've acquired in this job, all the things that I've learned to do, that I don't know when I'm going to use. I use them for my job, but maybe they're going to be useful like in 20 years from my life.
Sure. But you came from very different circumstances. It's the peril of success, right? Like you and the kid's dad like worked very hard to achieve all of these things in life. Yeah. And now they're reared in, you know, like an insane degree of privilege.
Yeah.
And it becomes more difficult to instill that kind of work ethic into somebody who, you know, grows up that way.
I think you're correct. I think it becomes a lot more difficult, but I think it goes back to the discipline and it goes back to priorities. And I think for me, it becomes about what kind of, you know, I feel like I'm their guardian because we don't possess our children, right? I mean, we just come here, they come through us, but they're as much as our teachers as we are their teachers, and we're constantly learning and teaching, you know, in every relationship in our life. And I feel that we get this moment in time, which is very short in a way, that we get to influence our children, because then they go, I mean, look at my parents. They had 14 years to influence me. Then I was out into the world and I never went back. Mm-hmm. And I keep remembering, like, what are all the things that if they wouldn't have taught me those things, where would I be today? And I'm so grateful for them, for those lessons. And I feel like, yes, I grew up in very different circumstances than my kids, and it is a bit more challenging to have them, you know, make their bed and wash the dishes and clean their, you know, when I have a person that can do it too. But I make a point of me doing it, so then they learn that, oh, mommy's doing the dinner, mommy is mm-hmm. making the breakfast, mommy is, so they're like, we can
model.
You have to model, and I feel like
it's a different kind of modeling.
Is the type of modeling that I prefer. is the type of modeling that I find to be the important type of modeling, because that's the, you know, I mean, what's the most important thing you're going to do in your life? I feel like raising children is by far the most challenging thing I've ever done, and the most fulfilling at the same time. And, you know, but I feel that if I don't do that, if I don't equip my children to be good, capable assets, you know, for themselves in their lives, if they're not going to be, then I fail. I feel.
Yeah, you haven't done your job.
Then I haven't done my job. I mean, I feel that that's my job. I mean, that's a job I do to kind of make a living so I can, like, you know, put food on the table and have, but my real job as a mom, and I chose to be a mom, so I have to show up for my kids. And I feel like these things that my, you know, I think is really what shaped me and what made me who I am today was definitely the upbringing that I had and what my parents, mm-hmm. how they guided me. And I feel like that's really important. So I make that a priority in my life to make sure that my kids are going to have, even though they don't have those same needs, you know, to do those things, because my mom didn't have a person she could pay to come clean the house. We had to, you clean the bathroom, you clean the, you know, it was like a list. All of us have to share between us who's going to do what. And we grew up that way. And it was kind of fun because, you know, I always loved the cleaning part. You know, I love organizing and cleaning. I feel like a clean house is a clean mind, is like a, what's out is in, you know, if like, if everything is organized outside, I can think. And I tell my kids that, and I feel that if I can really get them to do those simple things in life, you know, and learn those things and teach them how to be self-sufficient and capable human beings, I feel like I've done my job, and then I can rest. And then whatever else they do, the choices they make, if they mm-hmm. choose to eat the food that I fed them when they were little, if now they want to go eat, you know, whatever, or, I mean, it's going to be what they're going to do, you know. They're going to choose their friends. Hopefully they choose wisely, because in the end of the day, they are going to be the one dealing with the consequences of their actions. And I always tell them, like, listen, you know, you're going to go out there and you're going to make the whatever choice you make, there are going to be consequences. You're dealing with those consequences, not me. Mm-hmm. This is your life.
And sometimes they need to make those mistakes and face those consequences.
Like we had. I mean, how many mistakes have you done? I mean, I have a list. Oh, I don't even remember.
And those experiences are formative. Like, I'm sure if you look in the rearview mirror and think about the panic attacks that you were having on airplanes and your inability to get into an elevator and, you know, this desire to jump off your balcony, on some level, you wouldn't wish that experience on anybody, but you probably wouldn't want to change your experience either, because it's set in motion this whole sensibility and way of being that you now have. And I think with kids, they, regardless of whether they hear you in the moment or whether they go out into the world and make a bunch of mistakes, like, they come back.
Yeah.
And whatever you taught them, it's in there. And at some point when they're ready or whatever, like, they return to it.
And, you know, and I think to trust that, it's very important. And I also feel like,
because if you try to overly control it, you're going to drive them away.
Absolutely. So. And you know, I think for me, I keep going back to me as a kid and the trust my parents had in me to let me go. And I wouldn't be who I am today if it wasn't for them trusting in me and for all the mistakes that I've made and then had to come the other side and figure out for myself. So I think it's important to give our children the dignity of their own process, you know, because we had a dignity, you know, we have to go through our own process to become who we are. And I think as long as they know that we are there and what what is our values, you know, is like those things that are important. What is that we stand for? What's important for us, you know, as a value, as a core value, as being a good human being and a good person. And if you taught that to your children and they got it, in the end of the day, they're going to go out there in the world and they're going to have to make their mistakes. And I think the best thing you can do for them is just be there for them whenever they come back and if they want your help, you know. And I think it's hard because you want to protect them. Like, you can put bubble wrap on them so like nothing will touch them and they will be safe. But in the end of the day, that's unrealistic. And it's like,
it doesn't work anyway.
You know what? I like this idea. You know, there's a metaphor of the butterfly. Imagine the caterpillar as she's transforming into becoming the butterfly. She's, you know, eating all the, you know, until she finally starts spinning into a cocoon. And then she has to like go through that whole strenuous process. If you ever seen like, you know,
they turn into glop.
Yeah, but they're like, and it's really kind of like hard to, like when they're coming out, it's like really awkward and it looks like there's very strenuous and very difficult. So if you go in there and you try to help them come out, you're going to cripple them. You're going to cripple the butterfly and she won't be able to have the strength she needs.
The struggle is crucial to the growth.
And have to give them the dignity of their own process. You have to be, and I keep reminding myself, I cannot take away that opportunity for them because my parents gave me the opportunity for me to go through my own challenges and I grew and I want my kids to have that same opportunity because whoever they're going to become is going to be based on what their choices, and hopefully I gave them enough good example and good values where they would make the choices that is right for them, you know?
What is it that you want people to understand or take away from the new book and how you are modeling this lifestyle? Whether it's dietary changes, lifestyle changes, movement practices, how can somebody who is interested in kind of leveling up across the board begin the process of making those changes in their life?
You know, it's funny, you know, because when I decided to do a cookbook, I'm the farthest thing there is from a chef. Let me tell you something. I'm not a chef.
Let's be honest. You've got a private chef at home. That person is taking care of everything.
Not
for
anymore.
You.
I used to.
You do. You don't anymore?
Sure. No, I don't. I don't.
Come it's on. Been,
no, the last 2 years, I don't.
You're cooking your own meals?
Yes, I'm cooking my own meals. Yeah. I grew up that way. And I want, like I told you, like my priority is showing my kids what I believe it's important for them. And I can't say, oh, this is important, and I'm not doing it. You know what I mean? So it has to be cohesive, right? And I think that for me, really being, like, living what I believe is very important, and I was showing my kids that this is important to me. Like, the only way I'm going to show them that is by doing that. So yes, I had chefs, and this is how I learned how to cook a lot of the things. A lot of the recipes in the book are like inspired by the things that I created with the chefs that I had throughout the years. I had the opportunity to, you know, to really work with incredible people, mm-hmm. incredible chefs, people that love food as much as I do because I love food. But it was really an idea for me to, look, I can say, go and meditate, go and exercise. You know, I believe meditation, I believe rest, I believe exercise, I believe nutrition, all of those things are extremely important for you to be able to take kind of ownership of your health and really take care of yourself and have and work on just having a more clear mind and just feeling more connected to yourself. I think all of those things are different aspects of it. But the reason about the cookbook is, quite frankly, I was seeing kids were coming to our house and in play dates and moms would come and be like, how did you get my kid to eat broccoli or roasted vegetables? Mm. And it was like so simple. And I was like, oh, maybe we can share how to make some simple recipes that are super easy. You can make it like in 10 minutes. And, you know, moms, you just sometimes feel overwhelmed. And I know because life is busy. There's so much going on. So I was like, how can I help in this way? And also I feel like food is a perfect time for you to practice being present and mindful because you can eat like on a rush and not being present and the food have one effect in your body. Or you can do something, which is what I talk about in the book, is like every time I look at my food, not only the act of preparing your food, there's so much love and you're touching the food and you're connecting with your food, that's one thing. But even if you're not the one cooking your food, just to take a moment to bless your food, to acknowledge that that is something that is alive, that you're taking it and you're, that's also your source of life, you know, so it's kind of like connecting to the food in that way. I think it does something because everything is energy. So you're having a transfer of energy with something and with the intention that you're eating, it has a different, I feel huge, you know, mm-hmm. when I start doing that.
It does make a difference.
How it has a different, just being present and being connected to what you're doing, having gratitude for that moment. And you get to do that 3 times a day, you know. I mean, now I have a juice once a day, but I still bless my juice. But it's just kind of like, it's just this book, what I would like to for people to take is like, it can be really simple. It doesn't have to be complicated to eat healthy. And really, like if you have plans, you know, my mom taught me, you know, since I was a kid, like no food waste. So how can we organize our meals so
book.
We can... So
there's a big thing about like reducing waste.
Yeah, that's for me, that's huge. Mm-hmm. And also like meal planning. Like if you're going to buy, because, or you know, food sourcing, that's huge. It's not about having something with a lot of condiments and a lot of stuff. It's just like, keep it simple, but buying really great quality products. Like if you can do that, and then instead of like, because a lot of people are like, oh, and then you buy organic and then you throw it out because it's like, you know, it spoils much faster. And I'm like, yeah, but if you have a meal planning, and I teach that, I kind of give some suggestions in the book. Like my mom did that. I grew up like that because she didn't have time. You know, she was working all the time. So she had like in the fridge, like what are we going to have for the whole week? So she would go to the groceries and she would buy, and then the things would roll out to the next day. So you would always know what we were eating, and things that wouldn't be eaten could be easily transferred for the next day and be made into the next
organized
meal.
So that nothing spoils and you're
so nothing
to the
spoils
things.
And you never had food waste because you're always taking it from one day to the next, so it's never wasting. You always have great quality food. You get organized. You have like your broths and all those things that you cook like on the weekend, and you put it in the freezer. So you always, broth makes everything taste better. So if you make a rice, if you make a soup, anything, you just put broth in it is amazing. You're making it, even if you're making a grilled chicken, you just put broth in it, makes it amazing. So it was just like introducing an idea of how can we eat health. How can we eat healthier, and how can we also practice, in a way, a meditation? Because you know, maybe people are not going to sit for 30 minutes or 15 minutes, however long, in meditation. But if they can just take that moment, and then it just becomes the practice of observing and of having these moments of gratitude in a day, it just changes your life, because it's kind of like, you practice, you start little by little, and when you realize you're having moments of gratitude 100 times a day about everything, because that kind of seed was planted. And then you're like, wow, like I get to experience this, or I get, and then life suddenly changes because the ordinary becomes extraordinary. Like the ordinary, you know, for us is ordinary maybe to have a plate of food, but for so many people it's not, you know?
Well, the more kind of mindfulness and presence that you can bring to a mundane experience, the more extraordinary it becomes.
But and then I think life becomes really amazing, you know, expressed. Because
it's great. It's a beautiful book, and it's very accessible. And like you said, like it's simple. It's like simple stuff, easy to prepare, super healthy. Let me ask you this. What is the challenge or the obstacle that you're facing right now that you're trying to work through this year? Like what is coming up for you in the spirit of bringing intentionality into kind of the new year and what you want to manifest and express?
You know, I think I'm always working constantly in patience and in being patient and just accepting the timing of things, you know, from the simple things, like I have a project or something I'm working on and I'm like, and people are not moving at the speed that I want, or I'm doing a construction and like, you know, it's supposed to be finished and it's like still not, like, you know, in whatever area it is, I think one of the things that I really am working on is to not allow the outside, you know, the intensity of whatever is happening in the
outside.
There's
a lot of noise around you.
There's a lot of noise.
That has to be hard. If we had more time, I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah,
but
we have
that
to.
That has to be challenging.
Yeah, there's a lot of noise. So I think the thing is, how do I look at everything and have the patience and the compassion also for myself and for others, and just kind of be in that space of, you know, allowing things to be what they are and not try to change them, and just accept them for what they are and release that and just be, and just kind of go back to putting the focus on the things that I can control, and just keep working at that. Just that that's like an everyday
ongoing
battle. Yeah, it's an everyday
I can't imagine
exercise. And and I guess, you know, it's I get to do those things. I feel like, you know, this is happening for me. I'm not the type of person who's like, why is this happening to me? I'm like, why is this happening for me? There's always an opportunity for me to grow, and there's always so many. So, but I think this of just kind of accepting what is it's a kind of something that's on my consciousness and is constantly coming to me every day for me to exercise patience, compassion for myself, for others, and just kind of stay on that, you know? Things are exactly as they meant, as they are, and it's perfect. Everything is perfect as is, you know?
Well, I need a little bit more of that in my life too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a practice, you know? It's like, I haven't achieved that yet, but that's what I'm working on. I'll let you know if I
let me know.
To the other side.
I gotta let you go. So thank you so much. That was absolutely delightful.
Thank you.
So fun meeting you and talking to you. Everybody pick up the new book, Nourish, at your favorite bookseller. We'll link all that stuff up in the show notes.
That's awesome.
And come back and talk to me again sometime. This
I
was super fun. And I'm going to go straight to Erewhon and get your new smoothie. That's why you came to LA.
No, exactly.
Get that up on its feet.
I had like four yesterday. I was like, oh my God, I ate so much. I couldn't even eat at dinner barely last night. But it's the immune booster smoothie because... Gaia Herbs. I don't know if you know Gaia Herbs.
Yeah.
They're amazing. I've been using them for 20 years. Actually, when I was having my panic attacks, my doctor at the time suggested I take adrenal supplements. And that's how I learned about them 20 years ago. Funny now, 20 years later, here I am working with them because I think they're amazing. And so I wanted to do an immune boost smoothie and really a great after workout smoothie. So like something that I could just like a meal that I could have after workout. So in this one, there was like coconut meat, coconut milk, acai. You know, I grew up in acai. I love that. So superfood. There is lucuma. There is, of course, elderberry syrup from Gaia Herbs. And I have bananas, frozen bananas. So it kind of gives like a little thickness. And I have almond butter. Almond butter. And I also put some collagen in there. Some vanilla collagen. So it's a yummy stuff. It's really filling. You're going to like it. You have to tell me what you think about it after.
I will.
But it's really yummy. It feels like a dessert, but it's so good. It's full of good stuff. Nutrient dense.
Awesome. Do I have to take out a second mortgage on my house to buy this smoothie?
No,
maybe, right?
But it's a meal. Like I promise you, once you eat, once you drink this, it's literally like a meal. So once you're done with it, you're not going to be hungry for the last like 4 or 5 hours. You'll be like all good to go.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
This episode was brought to you today by Momentous. Try Momentous for yourself by going to livemomentous.com/richroll for 20% off plant-based protein and all of their top-of-the-line products. That's it for today. Thank you for listening. I truly hope you enjoyed the conversation. To learn more about today's guest, including links and resources related to everything discussed today, visit the episode page at richroll.com, where you can find the entire podcast archive, as well as podcast merch, my books, Finding Ultra, Voicing Change, and The Plant Power Way, as well as the Plant Power Meal Planner at meals.richroll.com. If you'd like to support the podcast, the easiest and most impactful thing you can do is to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and on YouTube, and leave a review and or comment. Supporting the sponsors who support the show is also important and appreciated. And sharing the show or your favorite episode with friends or on social media is, of course, awesome and very helpful. And finally, for podcast updates, special offers on books, the meal planner, and other subjects, please subscribe to our newsletter, which you can find on the footer of any page at richroll.com. Today's show was produced and engineered by Jason Camiolo, with additional audio engineering by Kale Curtis. The video edition of the podcast was created by Blake Curtis, with assistance by our creative director, Dan Drake. Portraits by Davey Greenberg, graphic and social media assets courtesy of Daniel Solis.
Thank you, Georgia Whaley, for copywriting and website management. And of course, our theme music was created by Tyler Pyatt, Trapper Pyatt, and Harry Mathis. Appreciate the love. Love the support. See you back here soon. Peace. Plants.
Namaste.